2022 Death Holler brought us Season 3, Slash or Pass. It became the classic horror film podcast of its time. Now Death Holler brings us the most shocking season ever. Season 4, Dead or Dead.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Imagine, if you will, that one of the hosts is absolutely terrified of zombies.
So, what's the plan? Bash him in the head, that seems to work out.
Now, accept the fact there is no escaping this horror. Death Holler brings back the dead. Remember, when you're in Death Holler, listener discretion is advised. With hospitality like this, you'll never want to leave. We hope you stay alive.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.
Welcome back to Death Holler. I'm your host, Reverend Dr. Death, and joining me as always is my co-host, La Urena. And this episode, we are discussing World War Z from 2013. Tagline, I can't leave my family.
What?
This one's even better. Horror in the streets. And I added Lady in the Sheets?
Horrors in the streets. There's some horrors in the streets.
And I think that might be all the taglines, period, for this movie, if you can believe it. But directed by Mark Forster, written by Matthew Michael Carnahan, Drew Goddard, and Damon Lindelof, who did the screenplays. Matthew Michael Carnahan and J. Michael Straczynski did the screen story, whatever that means. And then Max Brooks obviously did the book that it was based off of.
Yes.
Music by Marco Beltrami, made for a budget of $125 million, so it's probably the largest, maybe outside of Zombie. I don't know what Zombieland is off the top of my head, but it's probably the biggest budget zombie movie that's ever been. But it did bring in $540.5 million, so it did make a pretty good profit.
Okay. That's Zombieland, or is that World War Z?
No, I'm saying that World War Z made $540.5 million.
Okay.
So it made a profit, even if it was expensive as fuck for a zombie movie.
Yeah.
Principal players, we have Brad Pitt playing Jerry Lane.
Never heard of him.
Yeah, I don't know who Brad Pitt is. But what about the name Jerry Lane? Like, that is that right off the bat, I think, is it's not a name that, I mean, it might have been from the novel, the Jerry part of it was, I don't really remember, but like, it's not a, for the type of character he plays in this movie, it is not a heroic name whatsoever.
Mm-mm.
It's like, who's out there doing, you know, trying to save us? Oh, it's old Jerry. It's like,
old Jer. They should have made his last name Rig or something, you know?
Yeah, Lane. I don't know. That sounds like a street or something. Old Jerry Lane.
Yeah.
Just that's where the brothel's at. He's a former NATO spec ops agent, and he's also now a stay-at-home dad.
making
pancakes, as the kids like to say, based upon Adventure.
I love whatever that song, time. Adventure Time.
Yeah, that's what he does, and he's apparently good at pancakes. That's the only thing you really get about his home life. Brad Pitt's been in 12 Monkeys, another post-apocalyptic movie, Fight Club. The Movie Critic, which is upcoming from, it's supposed to be Tarantino's last film ever.
Whoa.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, he plays a really good role in that. That the stunt guy who fills in for Leonardo DiCaprio's character, he's got some pretty good scenes toward the end of the movie, especially. He's in Deadpool 2. I only throw that in there because he's invisible for his character's part, all except for one scene where he gets electrocuted to death, and you can see him for a split second. Inglourious Bastards. That's a meme by now. It's like, would you take that deal? I'd take that deal. Damn good deal, you know. His terrible accent in that, but he that's not the worst. That I mean, it's funny in that one, but we'll get to one where it's just outright bad. Ocean's 11. I think he was in the sequels, but you know, the 2001 version at least.
Yeah.
Because it was based upon an old movie. Snatch. He's all about them dags. Being John Malkovich, which we've discussed prior this season. So, I mean, it's coming back. 7 Years in Tibet's the one I was referencing. His accent in that movie is so fucking awful. It's ridiculous.
I thought for sure you were going to say Snatch, because doesn't he have an Irish accent in Snatch?
He does. That's where he says the dags, but it kind of matches. The 7 Years in Tibet is just awful. Like,
what was his accent in that? Because your girl has never seen it. Big shocker.
I only had to watch. The only reason I've watched it is because I think one time they showed it to us at school for some reason. And whenever they did, I don't even know what the movie's supposed to be about. I just remember his accent in the movie stood out like worse. It's way worse than Keanu's accent in Dracula. I'll just put it that way.
What is he imitating? Who, like, what nationality or what?
He says Himalayas, so I don't know what accent that's supposed to be, but that's the way he says it in that movie.
Okay, I don't like it.
He plays in the movie Seven, which is a really good movie, and we will probably discuss during Human Horror season.
Yeah.
Interview with a Vampire, which we'll be discussing during Vampire season. California technically would qualify during Human Horror season. I might throw that in as like the Attack of the Bees for the Seven episode.
Okay,
he plays I think like him and this a female actress play like a couple of California serial killers or something like that run upon this family. And of course, Thelma and Louise is his first movie that he ever did.
A lot of
women, you know, went all about his pecs in that movie.
Lord.
Yeah. And then Cutting Class, which is a slasher movie from the 80s that we didn't cover the first go around. So he might come back in that season too.
Okay.
He's been in some horror movies. Yeah. Despite the fact you wouldn't think that he's been in them. Let's see. We got Daniela Curtiz playing Segan, who is an Israeli spec ops and who is saved by Jerry, like toward mid to end point of the movie.
He jerry-rigged her hand.
Yeah, he jerry-rigged her hand, and she somehow survived, even though nobody else thought to do that in this movie whatsoever. He is the chosen one, everybody, Trump. So, she was in a movie called After Death, which I think is another zombie movie. She's been in several Israeli movies too, but like that's the one that I noticed that kind of like synced up with this one.
I liked her. I liked her character, and I like what she played, because I think doesn't like most women serve time in the Israeli army or whatever?
Gal Gadot did, so yeah, I think they do.
I don't know if it's a requirement or if you do. I think it's just 2 years or something. It's nothing major, but if you do a small amount of time, you get like good money for college or something like that.
Yeah, so that's probably, I mean, I do know that they have quite a bit of their women in the military, so I mean, that would make sense. Morel Enos plays Karen Lane, Jerry's loving wife and mother to their two daughters. And it's not Karen, K-A-R-E-N, it's K-A-R-I-N, because she's a special Karen, which makes it even worse. She's in some movies called If I Stay, Sabotage, and The Captive.
Never heard of any of them.
No. We have James Badge Dale playing Captain Speak. or Spake, who's the U.S. military that makes the ultimate sacrifice for a potential cure. He's the guy whenever they get to land the plane in the Singapore, wherever it was, the original breakout spot. He's the one that actually comes out there and saves Jerry's ass, like right at the last second, and gets bit on the leg, and then pops himself one right before he takes, you know, they take off. He was in the movie 13 Hours, Iron Man 3, and The Departed, so he's been in a few big ones.
Okay.
Ludi Bokan plays Jürgen Wormbrum, the Israeli agent who was the first to respond to the zombie threat. Several Israeli-based movies that he's been in.
I like his character a little bit.
Yeah, it's pretty good character, and it does introduce a concept that even if it's not called the 10th man or whatever doctrine, it actually is a thing that the Israeli government has, where they have somebody who dissents against the major, you know, thoughts of the rest of the leadership, just to give like a what if scenario, like what if this is real, should we, you know, and kind of tries to steer their thinking away from, like, you know, what everything else is. And he's actually in the book too. It is a character in the book, although it's quite a bit different. I think he's one that actually gives the Bane character, who's like a reporter going around collecting these stories in the book, he's the one that like gives him like places that he should go to find like other survivors who dealt with a zombie threat and, like, you know, and all that sort of thing. David Morris plays ex-CIA agent. That's all he goes by. He worked with Jürgen to spread information about the zombie threat. He's been in several big things. The Hurt Locker with our boy Jeremy Renner, who we just talked about. The Green Mile, Contact, Medium. He was in 3 episodes of that. He played George Washington in the John Adams miniseries on HBO.
Wow.
He was in Disturbia and, of course, 12 Monkeys with Brad Pitt. So this is another movie that they were in together.
Okay.
But they didn't have any scenes in 12 Monkeys. It was kind of interesting that they worked together on a whole other movie and they never had any scenes together.
Yeah.
Mokina plays Theory. Umatani, which is Jerry's former UN colleague. He's the guy that Jerry talks to through most of the movie to helps him get on the ship initially. And then later on, he's the one that tries to argue to keep Jerry's family on the boat because that's a shitty part of the movie that really bugs me, because Jerry did what they asked him. And even if he died in service, honor that and give his family the benefit of having safety. Don't just like, well, we have no use for him now that he's out, let's kick. That kind of shows you how fucking sorry the U.S. government is, even if it is fictitious.
I will say this about him. Excuse me. Why I totally lost my spot where we're at. Is it Theory? I'm just kidding. Theory and Jerry? No, I'm just kidding. He said, and I quote, "I will move mountains to get you on this ship," which was so funny because, I don't know, it was very romantic of him, even though that wasn't the scene at all. But to be fair, the military did get them somewhere safe.
They did, but their whole thing with him was, it's like, you pull your weight and you go do what we ask you to do, and your family has a place upon this boat.
That's true.
And even if he died in combat or died in the pursuit of that goal and never achieved it, he still did what you asked. So exactly. At least honor that.
Yeah. And it was crazy because there was so, you could hear on the phone, and I don't mean to spoil into, it was not really a spoiler, but you could hear a ton of military personnel trying to get themselves on that boat. And they're like, there's no room. There is no room for you on this boat.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no one coming to save you, basically.
Just bunker up and hope you don't get swarmed, which we'll get into all that a little bit later. Sterling Gerrans plays, and there's a lot more people than I'm going to list. At a certain point, I just had to stop. And like, you know, who actually has either some major scene in the movie or is somebody who's oddly in this movie that's kind of interesting. So Sterling Gerrans plays Constance Lane. That's Jerry's youngest daughter. Abigail Hargrove plays Rachel Lane, who's the oldest daughter. This one's interesting just for who it is. It's Peter Capaldi playing the WHO doctor, which is funny because he was also Doctor Who, the 12th Doctor, And Eccleston that we covered was the Ninth Doctor. So we've had a couple of Doctor Who's in this.
I have a feeling we're going to run into quite a bit of Who's, Doctor Who's, if you will.
Maybe. I don't know how many more of them branched out into horror movies. I mean, but it's kind of interesting that this episode in particular hit up two of them right back to back.
Yeah.
Matthew Fox, rounding it out, plays the Parajumper, and he was the one that we previously mentioned on My Boyfriend's Back, who was kind of like the jock who was with Missy in that movie, that was the one that Johnny Dingle had to overcome to, you know, get Dingle. to get his girl.
Jesus.
All right, synopsis. A modified rabies virus has broken out worldwide and is causing anyone bitten to become infected with a matter of seconds. Jerry Lane, a former UN agent turned stay-at-home dad, is out with his family when these murderous cannibals cause complete chaos to break out all around them. After narrowly escaping death, Jerry uses his government ties to secure a place on the U.S. aircraft carrier for his family. Unfortunately, this comes with a provision that Jerry uses his skills to find a cure for the zombie plague. Jerry is on the run, his whole world's come undone, and Seeger's got a gun.
Oh, my God. I can hear the song in my head. Is Seeger the one, the young doctor?
Seeger's the female Israeli agent.
Oh, never mind. Okay.
Know, yeah.
She's got a gun. She doesn't have a hand to use it.
Well, she uses her other hand. Yeah. Like, she's shooting some zombies on that plane with her other arm.
Yeah.
Quotes from Jürgen Warmbrunn. Most people don't believe something can happen until it already has. That's not stupidity or weakness. That's just human nature.
Human being the key word there.
Yeah. Jerry Lane, you're letting people in. And then Jürgen's like, yeah, every person we save is one less zombie to fight. Pretty smart.
I mean, it's smart until it isn't.
Well, there's whole things about that was stupid from the screenwriter's point of view, but we're going to get to that.
Yes.
Captain Speck, or Speak, looks like we just woke the dead. In that respect, please turn off all pagers and cell phones. Oh,
that was so fucking funny. I was dying. And I was so mad at the wife for calling him. And I was thinking, you know what? They should have said right then and there, you don't fucking call me, I call you. Because you never know where he's going to be, where noise can't be a thing. But maybe at that point they didn't know that noise was an attractor.
They didn't know that noise was, just because that's where he figured out the noise thing was that point.
Yeah.
And then he figures that, and then slowly throughout the movie, he figures out the weakness part of it, yes. You know, being their other. And this is a big, long speech that the very, very stupid virologist who shoots himself and is in the movie for like 0.0 seconds, it feels like. Yeah. But anyways, this is a speech that he gives Jerry on the plane. Andrew Fastback, Mother Nature is a serial killer. No one's better or more creative. Like all serial killers, she can't help the urge to want to get caught. What good are all those brilliant crimes if no one takes the credit? So she leaves crumbs. Now, the hard part, why you spend a decade in school, is seeing the crumbs. But the clue's there. Sometimes the things that you thought was the most brutal aspect of the virus turns out to be the chink in its armor. And she loves disguising her weaknesses as strengths. She's a bitch. I like that quote because the hippy-dippy people are all like, Mother Nature loves us. We just have to become one. And it's like, have you ever been outside? Do you not realize how, like, it's really eat or be eaten in nature? Like, yeah. And Mother Nature throws storms at us. She does everything she can to wipe us off this planet. So where do you get that she's at one with us?
She's, I mean, I'm not saying go out there and that's it.
I'm not saying go out there and chop down trees. Hell, I love nature, and I hate when people go out there and they dirty it up by taking, like, you know, we're going to go on a hike and we're going to bring our kids like 14 bags of Cheetos and we're going to throw them down on the trail because this is nature's dumpster. It's like, no, fuck you. But at the same time, don't disrespect her. She will wipe you out.
Yeah.
I mean. And then finally, the televangelist going the complete opposite route of Ken Voorhees. Whatever goes to hell stays in hell. That's like a little snippet at the end of the movie as they're like showing all the burned bodies.
I mean, it's like if you got your Ken off of Wish, you know?
Yeah, yeah. visuals. this movie's hit or miss with visuals. It's got some really, really good like scenes. Mm-hmm. And some of the individual zombies, for example, the ones in the WHO office.
Oh man, those are awesome.
They look great.
I think it's because the blue afterglow from that building.
Well, that helps, but also like just the prosthetics. They make them look like zombies. But I'll give you an example of one that's terrible. Whenever Israel, or whichever part of Israel it is, gets overrun, right before it gets overrun, and they start singing, and they skip over to this one like female zombie that's kind of just like shuffling in a corner, and she turns around. She looks as bad as anything in I Am Legend. Like her CGI look is awful. You don't remember that scene?
I'm not saying that I don't. I actually just refreshed this last night because I'm like, okay, let me refresh this again so that way I'm, you know, understanding what's going on, and we'll get into that later. But in my opinion, and I will give an explanation a little bit, there was so much going on with a lot of these zombies, I could barely see a goddamn thing.
Well, And that does help, but if you individually, if they're not made up, mm-hmm. if they're not made up and they're CGI in this movie, the CGI looks bad. It does.
Yeah. So thankfully I didn't know. I wouldn't say thankfully. I mean, I didn't notice her, but I think I know what scene you're talking about, because there was very few individual zombies in the Israeli scene.
Well, it's right before they all start piling on in a heap to climb over the wall.
Oh, which was she outside the wall?
Yeah, she was outside the wall.
I know.
She looks awful. Like, I mean, and it's like, if you're going to focus on one zombie, why didn't you use makeup effects on that one? Like,
yeah.
I get it using the ones that are climbing on each other. That's all CGI. And those don't look as bad as the ones in I Am Legend, just because, like you said, there's so much going on, you can't really focus on them. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like the ones that they do, like that you randomly catch, like in transition scenes, they do look bad. Like, I mean, the effects are just not there to make them look nearly as good as the other zombies in the movie that they actually focus on.
Yeah.
Now the visuals, like, and this is probably where they spend, or I mean, besides like the CGI, where they spend a lot of their money. Well, besides Brad Pitt, I'm sure his like, well, if I'm in this movie, and he also produced it, by the way, Plan B, whatever studio is his production company. He probably got a huge paycheck out of that budget. So regardless of that, they probably spent a lot of their money also though on the actual individual, like, shots they had, because some of those scenes they had, even if they were mostly CGI created, of like the panoramic views of some of those cities or whatever, mm-hmm. they were really good.
Yeah, there was good scenes that involved lighting, or lack of lighting, if you will, but you could still see what's going on.
The grocery store that they stop at the beginning, that's very good use of lighting. Just how like dark it is and everything.
Yes, that nighttime scenes, the apartment going up the stairs scenes, and there's multiple going up the stairs scenes. I thought those were done pretty well.
They were, and I'll give them credit for this too. This goes in the visuals, even though we don't really think about it that way. The set dressing, that store, and some of the other locations they had, they very much sold the apocalyptic vibe. I mean, like, you know, just the, I mean, it helped with the actors, like, you know, moving around frantically, like that cop you think is going to shoot Jerry for shooting somebody, and he's just like, fuck this, and he goes over and starts grabbing stuff.
Yeah.
That small scene sells the, you know, the fright and the anxiety of the people going in this situation more than most other things in the movie.
Yeah, because Jerry just had to kill two men that, I can't tell if they were trying to take something from her or rape her or both.
They were trying to take something from her, in, I think, both literal and metaphorical sense.
Yeah.
I mean,
right there in the middle of the store. It's like, really? Really? You know what's going on, right? Like,
well, I mean, when the shit hits the fan, I mean, humans are that bad.
yeah.
And that's why a lot of people might not like zombie movies, because we don't like to acknowledge that and that was something that killed me during 2020. Everybody was like, oh, we'll come together during this crisis. It's like, do you not know how humans are? And whenever they started like, you know, I can't believe people are hoarding all the toilet paper, what are we going to do? It's like, you're lucky that there's still food because that, I mean, we're terrible when it comes to crisis like that.
Oh my God. Yeah. You know what though? I hear areas like where you and Daphne live that it gets bad super fast, but you guys are also pretty far from a lot of locale. Whereas my local Walmart, I was just going through, you know, the 2020 archives, if you will, on Facebook. And it was like, we had toilet paper. I mean, it was a lot emptier than usual, specific toilet paper, but everything else, like tortillas and other food on the shelves. We took the kids to the store. We're just like, hey, you want to come see how crazy it looks? Because, you know, we're good parents and we like to, you know, put our kids in the in danger. And there was no danger. We looked like idiots. And I'm like, wow. I'm like, okay, maybe this was a restock day or something. I had not ever seen it as bad as it was. Other people were seeing it, shockingly.
I mean, I've never seen it as bad here as it was during that time. But, I mean, the whole meat department had nothing during one point of the of 2020.
That would have
like
scared
we went
me.
In there. Yeah, we went in there and every shelf was gone. Like, even the cuts of meat that nobody would even touch. Or, you know. But that's also why, I mean, despite living in an area that has very fertile soil, just like the amount of, like, flatland in this area is so poor that, I mean, a lot of people, and even if they could have, it was so quick that nobody could have, you know, raised a garden quick enough to really help it.
Oh, yeah.
We technically live in a food desert. And, I mean, you know, that's kind of what happens whenever that stuff goes on.
Okay, that's fucking scary.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are people who have their own, like, you know, but even then, they don't, it's a supplemental garden. It's not one that you rely on to get you through the winter or anything.
No, definitely not. I just remember the last storm you had, or storm warning, or tornado warning, I'm not sure. And you're like, well, I got to go to the store because everybody loses their goddamn mind out here. You know?
Snow. That's the main one that gets us.
Oh, my God. Okay. That's wild.
Yeah. The bread, the eggs, the milk, so they can make milk sandwiches. Those all go. I joke about the milk sandwiches, but that's really the first things bought up. I don't know why. It's like, I guess in wintertime you could technically put those outside and they'd be fine. But it's like, if you're worried about losing your power, why did you not get the canned stuff? Like the canned food shelves stay stocked and it's like the immediate like stuff that's going to go bad. Yeah. That they always grab.
Like you can't even guarantee you're going to have a fridge to keep all that meat warm, you know?
It's, I don't know. It's weird, but it happens every time there's a snow scare. It never fails. Story. Well, and visually, I don't know how much more to say about it. They do a good job with some of the, like the gore and stuff in the movie, although the movie was PG-13. So they cut back some of that, but you can see more of it in the director's cut that they restored it back in.
I wonder which one we have, but okay.
It's not, there's not that huge of a difference. There are some scenes though where like brains are getting blown out and they focus on it. So, I mean, it kind of goes that route.
That's my
bit.
Kind of movie.
Story. It's okay. It's based upon the book, but it's not at the same time. The book is more like the zombie war already happened. And now it's like a reporter wanting to go back and collect people's stories about how they survived during everything. And the interesting thing about the book, besides the socio-political stuff, which in the trivia we'll get to, they did try. That is what initially led Brad Pitt to want to produce the movie anyways, was the, you know, different looks at like how each region, you know, dealt with it just based upon those factors.
Yeah.
But despite that, it's just like individual things like culture too.
Yes.
Like for instance, America had a lot more what they called lame-os, which is funny. It going back to the Vincent Price movie, Last Man on Earth, that's what it stands for, Last Man on Earth.
Lame-os.
Lame-os, yeah. And America had a lot more of those where somebody who was a prepper barricaded themselves in. Of course, the zombies in that were Romero zombies, so they're not running over walls and everything.
Yeah.
But it was like an individual person who barricaded themselves in an individual town, and they survived through the whole entire thing because the amount of ammunition and just general and the individualism that Americans have got them through it, whereas other countries didn't have that, but their, you know, close-knit relationships in other countries helped them form communities that were able to push back, whereas in America, we're not really that, even in families, we're kind of like, ah, I need my space, you know what I'm saying? It looks at that sort of thing, which is what I really like about the book. The movie does not even attempt that. It's almost like the movie's the setup to the book in a roundabout way.
Yeah, I would say that in order. Okay, because I have started listening to the book, which, by the way, I did not know was an audio play.
Yeah, well, it kind of has to be if you want to do an audiobook because there's so many different characters.
Yes, and that's the thing is it's very enjoyable because of it being an audio play. And it's funny because I think Max Brooks plays the, not narrator, but the reporter.
The Jerry Lane of it all, yeah.
And then the rest, and then everyone else, every other actor is acting a part of what they saw, when they saw, and what they did to survive. Which is, I'm loving that so far. So I have started the book in audio version, and I'm loving it. But that being said, yes, you're right. Now, going back and watching the movie after I've gone through maybe only a few chapters of the book, you're right. This looks like it's like some kind of prequel, if you will.
Yeah, and it loses a lot, too. I mean, like, it's still, like I mentioned this before, but the thing that really stood out to me, there was individual scenes, but one of the things that, well, first of all, it looks, talking about the socio-political part of it, it looks at, like, Iran and, like, the whole, and Iraq and all those countries in the Middle East and how they responded to it. And in the book, it's like, you know, Israel thought they were going to get blown off the map by those other countries because now they had an excuse. It's like, well, we got to blow them up to get rid of the zombies.
Yeah.
But it actually ends up that Iran and Saudi Arabia end up nuking one another because they came to blows first before they ever went after Israel, which is craziness, you know, whenever you read it. There's a funny little scene where they're teaching rat terriers to go in tunnels to like, bring the zombies out because that's what they were bred to do was to go in the small spaces to get like, you know, rats.
Yeah.
But they use that instinct to get to draw the zombies out so they can, you know, pull them out. So they don't like live, you know, underneath the ground and come out and cause chaos.
Yeah.
You know? The scene that I liked the best though was there is, and I don't, Bill Maher is the name I'm thinking of. There's a definitely not Bill Maher with a definitely not Ann Coulter, and they're holed up in this apartment or this house in Los Angeles. They had a party there right whenever the apocalypse happened, and they're in close proximity and they fight like cats and dogs because of their political bents.
Oh, God.
But it's one of those like, there's sexual tension between them there always has been and end up fucking. And I'm just like, I could see those two doing that. Like, I mean, I really could.
Oh my God.
But you don't get any of that in the movie. So it's pointless to discuss it really with regards to the movie.
Just in the three chapters alone that I've listened to, I feel like it would be hard to make that into a movie and make it enjoyable because it would be such a long movie because once you've read the book, you probably want all the stories in there. I don't know how you would condense that down to make it a 2-hour movie.
You wouldn't want it to be a movie. If you did, it needed to just like maybe hit some of the biggest highlights. The best way to adapt this would be a TV series.
Yes. Oh, 100%. And that being said, when it's really hard when you've read a book and you've watched a movie. Because it's always going to be one is better than the other. In this case, you really can't compare the two. They're not the same story as much. So yeah,
Max Brooks actually responds to that in the trivia. Somebody asked him, it's like, what did you feel about how they adapted your characters in the movie? And he's like, I don't have any feelings about it because this isn't my book. So he said, I just enjoyed it for being the movie that it is.
And the paycheck he probably got.
Well, there's that too, but I mean, and he's not wrong. I mean, it's so different. It's not like Stephen King watching The Shining, seeing his characters basically, and then knowing that Stanley Kubrick was just like flipping him off the entire time. It's like everything about your book that I claimed that I liked, I fucking hated, and this is my movie, and fuck you. And Stephen King's like, what the, You know, I get it. And there's people on each side of that debate on which one's better, but
yeah,
that was intentional. Whereas in this one, it gets into the trivia a little bit, but I think they ran into issues where they couldn't really, like the studio interfered with it, and they were like, "Ah, we want more of an action movie," and they're like, "That's not what we're fucking doing." But okay,
yeah.
You know? So the story is basically just little vignettes, like different countries. Is Jerry being a Larry Stew or a Jerry Stew, as it were?
Jerry Stew.
Yeah, the male version of Mary Sue. He always has the right set of skills for every situation,
every scenario.
And I'm going to call it out because people are really like, you always call out the Mary Sues. Why don't you call out, you know, like Ray Palpatine? Why don't you call out, you know, well, I'm calling him out because this guy has the biggest set of plot armor that I've ever seen in my fucking life. no matter, like, miraculously, he doesn't get attacked when everybody else around him is. It's like,
yeah,
did you have a terminal disease yourself during all this, Jerry? Like, why are they not going after you?
He's got the HIV from all the times he was away from his wife. He's got the HIV or the herp. He's got something, man.
But yeah, it's the fact that the plane crashes and that the pilots both die instantly, but somehow Jerry and Segan live. Like,
oh yeah.
They make it where Jerry gets stabbed through the gut, but miraculously it misses enough organs or important ones that he can survive all the way to the WHO headquarters.
I knew you were going to call that out. I was like, oh, Reverend is absolutely going to be call out on this shit because, yeah. And then there's still zombies around. There's still zombies around.
Yeah, I don't know if it's which version it is, but he has to actually fight one for a split second while he's trying to unravel himself.
Must be the book. It wasn't the movie, unless there was a version of the movie that, you know, director's cut.
I think it was in the director's cut, but he's sitting there and one's snapping at him from, like, you know, and he has to, like, knock it off, and then he gets himself loose, and then he's, you know, and then Segan shows up right before he ends up having any major issues out of everything. Yeah. But. Which I don't understand that plane incident anyways, because how did the person get on the plane, given the fact that it takes 12 seconds mm-hmm. to become a zombie? How were they on that plane without being a zombie anyways? Because if they got bit prior to the plane, then it would have took more than 12 seconds from the run to the bathroom to try to wash it off. And they would have started, like, doing the twitch before they ever got back there.
Yeah, I have. No, and how did they not hear it?
Yeah, and, like, the dog was shown in somebody's lap previously, mm-hmm. and then if that was its owner, and that was who it was trying to go back to alert everybody, which I still don't know. I don't understand the point of that scene. Maybe it was just hearing the banging or whatever, and it just wanted people to know. But that person that it was sitting in the lap seemed fine.
Yeah.
Like, and was fine prior to even takeoff.
No, it doesn't make sense, and I just want to know, did that dog live?
It had a parachute.
We'll retcon
it. And whenever everybody was sucked out of the plane, its parachute went off.
Okay. It was trained. It knew how to activate the parachute. Okay, good. I was worried.
All right, since we're talking about plot holes in this movie, because it's got many, and this is story-based, I mentioned this off-air between you and Noah last time. That kills me in that scene in Israel. That it's the singing that draws the zombies, as if they're like you mentioned it, the helicopters, the amount of just human noise, because, you know, cities are noisy.
Oh yeah.
None of that drew the zombies that are, if it pans out and it shows them all around the place, like it's surrounded by zombies.
Yeah.
None of that regular noise attracts the zombies, but the singing does.
Let's be honest about that city. That city was fucking vibrating because they put that wall up in, what, a matter of days?
Months.
Okay,
at
so
most,
they knew.
Yeah.
Okay, they had a hand up on the fucking situation. And that's the thing about letting people in. This is part of the plot hole you're talking about right now. Is they're letting people in, but on one other side of the wall, there's a shit ton of zombies that are kind of starting to gather around.
Yeah, so that's the other thing. How are they getting in there safely? Like, yes. Where are they coming from? Because the zombies, when it pans out, either those are all humans or those are all zombies, and I think it's that they're all zombies. So where is the safe underground passage that those humans are coming from?
They have to be zombies because, as you previously mentioned, our plot holes really cover themselves really well. Like, if the movie was a plot hole, it would be a very cohesive movie because, in that same scene, and the reason why I know all those people are zombies on one side of the wall, mind you, not the entire, we're talking about not a circle, but a rounder area we're looking at where Israel's in the center of it. And on this side where the zombies are, that was where the woman was that turns and starts. You said the CGI looked horrible, but she's just running super fast towards the situation. And I didn't even know it was a woman. I just thought it was a cracked out looking dude with long hair, honestly. But
same difference.
Okay, yeah, tomato, potato. But yeah, so, and then I was thinking last night as I was watching this, which I'm going to give you a spoiler to Late Night with the Devil right now. Not even a spoiler for the movie, a spoiler for our discussion if we have it. Late Night with the Devil, the hypnotizing scene gave me a headache. And I'm talking about within seconds. And that headache is still lingering, by the way. So I'm watching this movie with a headache, FYI.
So just like you did with Stir of Echoes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I wonder if you're affected by that stuff. Like if somebody was to try to hypnotize you, if it would have an effect, because
I've been on stage trying to get hypnotized and I don't think I got hypnotized. They sent me off. They didn't pick me as one of their hypnotized people. I don't remember getting hypnotized, but then again, I hear most people don't, but I never performed. I never did anything. They were like, okay, these are the people that are staying. You can go. And I got up and I left and I don't remember getting headaches from that. It's got to be visually the whatever they had, the pendulum, the swinging pendulum.
Okay, yeah.
And this one was worse. This one was within seconds because the swinging pendulum had that spinning black and white swirl.
Oh, okay.
And that got me good. By the way, I still am recovering from that headache. And it could just be a headache that I had, but it happened right around that time. Very coincidental. Like, literally seconds after they started hypnotizing, Noah saw me put my head down, and he's like, what? I was like, it makes my head hurt. So I just looked down, and then they did it multiple times. Now, the reason why I bring that up, because one, it's funny. Two, I'm watching World War Z with a headache. And now I have questions. And thinking hurts when you have a headache. So my head was really hurting when I see, okay, well, there's an assload of zombies because they are coming to the city, not because people are singing. They were already coming to the city, but they just weren't really doing anything. They're just like, oh, we're here. We know there's people on the other side of this wall. We can't get over. And then, you know, all of a sudden they start turning into Mexicans and scaling the wall. So, you know.
Speaking of that, I know this was before Trump and TDS, Trump derangement syndrome. How do you think people feel about the wall was effective until it wasn't part of it? Like, I mean, now, like, given everything, because everybody was like, oh, you can't build walls. But clearly, if you want to keep somebody out, I mean, at least in this movie, they make the argument that walls do help. I mean...
To a degree, I think they needed more people on top of that wall. I mean, just look at, most of us seen Game of Thrones, okay? They did not have enough security on them walls, I swear.
No, I mean, they didn't have it in Game of Thrones either, and that was part of the reason why they get their ass handed to them. Spoiler alert for that show. But
yeah,
but it's just funny because watching it, that was the first thing I was thinking. I was like, oh, man, is the allegory, like, how would they spin it now? Like, if you went back and you were, like, on the left, like, side of politics and you were like, well, clearly walls don't work because they scaled them anyways. And it's like, so are you admitting that we need to police our borders? No, I'm not arguing that. It's like, okay.
No, but we need to defund the police.
But you admit that there's threats that could come across border. Well, in this movie, because there's zombies. Okay, yeah, mental leaps. Okay, I got you.
And we've discussed this before. There's always going to be those people that are like, they're humans. We just need to interact with them.
There's always going to be the people who are sympathizers, even for. It's funny because I play a D&D game weekly, and I introduced like this house full of like undead. to my characters, and one of the characters or one of my players like picked up the story that I had going on pretty quickly, which was amazing. Is Emilia, shout out to her. But like, she started being a zombie sympathizer, and Cody called her out for it, and it was hilarious. He's like, "You're one of those people that in the zombie apocalypse would be feeling sorry for the zombies."
I tell you what, it ain't me. I'd be like, "Leave them all out."
She's like, "These poor people, they were just the servants of the house." And I'm like, "Yeah, and somebody turned them into zombies." And so there you go.
Yeah. So I don't know. Going back, though, that huge plot hole pisses me off, and it makes my head hurt again with, like I said, seeing zombies on one side and people safely getting in on the other side, even though there's nothing stopping them from meeting each other. Like, how was that bus traveling down the road to get to the safe entrance, and zombies weren't like, "Oh, fuck, what's that?" You know?
Yeah, and running after it, yes, in droves, and then somebody had to be there. And once they were led to the entrance, them scaling the wall like they did anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Like, none of that made sense.
Yeah. So it, again, the wall was impressive. They did a good job. And I'm not saying that it wouldn't work. I'm just saying you wouldn't be able to let people in like they were.
The wall would only work in the event of a Romero apocalypse.
Oh, yeah.
This apocalypse, like I said, that's the thing that kills me about, not even thinking about your part of it, which is totally a valid plot hole. I couldn't stand it because it's like, oh, now that Jerry's here, he gets to experience the fact that the wall doesn't work because people start singing, of all things, to bring them in. It's like,
yeah, my Lord.
And the other thing that kills me in that scene, how long it takes. Jerry has already established that sound triggers them. He's already been to Singapore and knows that that's what happens. That's the whole reason he's in Singapore, is to learn that sound triggers these things. He sits there forever talking while this woman is singing. He never wants to, like, shut that shit down. Shut it down now. They're attracted to sound. He never tells anybody.
Yeah.
What is that? I mean, that made no sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, the hustle and bustle of that city alone, like I said, had those walls vibrating. There was a lot going on in those walls just with people moving and having normal everyday chatter, the fucking huge military vehicles that were driving around, like, ain't no thing. Yeah. But I do like how, I will say one thing, and it's still dumb. I'm not going to let this pass. But I do like how they made it sound like the microphone that was having the, you know,
the screeching, mm-hmm, like the feedback sound, the feedback or whatever error, was the thing, yeah, that drew him.
That really was kept happening over and over. And I'm like, okay. And then that's when he's realizing, oh, fuck, this ain't going to be good. You know, it made it look like you can have a normal life within the walls, but don't get crazy.
Well, the other thing is, too, and I don't know if this is their way of patching over this, but at the end of the movie, if you remember when they're showing the various scenes of them fighting back,
yes,
they have a stadium with speakers set up,
yes,
to draw them in so that they can firebomb the stadium. So,
yeah, that was legit. I kind of like that.
That would work, but it still doesn't cover up that human noises, mm-mm, attract them, because every other, like a pent, like a phone rings and they come from miles, oh, yeah, around in Singapore. So if that one sound, you're telling me that there's no phone ringing in this city at all?
Oh, yeah. I feel like even vibration would probably attract them.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, sound, I mean, that's what it is when it comes right into it. We can't even tell. We don't even know if these zombies being dead, if they can actually even hear anything. They might just respond to the vibration of things.
Possibly. Yeah, that makes sense.
Another plot point or plot hole in this exact situation before we move on to the other plot holes is I don't like the fact that when they scale the wall and they fall down, that their bodies are not broken to the point that they're just crawling. They literally get up and run. Some of them don't,
but yeah,
a lot of them just fall. Like, it's at least two stories down from that wall. At least they fall down and they can get up and run. I'm sorry, but even if they're undead and they don't feel it, their bones would be broke to the point that they couldn't walk or, yeah, run. I mean,
well, we saw somebody fall multiple stories down and land on a car, and they're immediately, you could see they're turning into a zombie. And that's right when Jerry and his wife are trying to get to the apartments, which in that scene was pretty cool. Not a plot hole, but you see, it was your first example of a person getting passed up by these zombies, and it was the drunk hobo. And I'm like, was it because he was drunk, or is there something wrong with him?
He probably had TB. Most homeless people do. I mean, so tuberculosis was probably killing him.
Okay, so I am sorry. I hate to sound so fucking stupid right now, but it is very early in the morning here in California, and I know we get vaccinated for tuberculosis, yeah or no? We get tested for it. I don't know that I've been vaccinated.
We get tested, but there's actually antibiotics that can treat it now.
Oh, okay, so there's antibiotics. So it's a treatable killing. Well, up to a point.
Once it's done so much damage, you're okay. Kind of hosed.
And that's what I was checking. Yeah, I was like, okay, so he's got some kind of... Could he also been... Maybe he didn't have TB. Maybe he was just killing his liver.
It could have been liver, mm-hmm. although, I mean, that's the thing about the explanation for weakness in this. What is weakness? I mean, does the beatus protect you? I mean, we discussed this off air. That technically is killing you. Your body is overflowing with toxic sugar. Shouldn't that be, you know, something that's considered a weakness? It's so loosey-goosey that you could argue anything really in there.
So
I mean,
they did specify that it was – oh, and meningitis, by the way, was the main – one they wanted to use. Meningitis is a killer too?
Viral meningitis will kill you pretty quick, but if you survive it, you're fine. The bacterial version, which is treatable, is actually more deadly because of how aggressive it is. So it's like one is you can't really treat, you can't really do anything other than just, you know, but they can survive it usually.
Yeah.
So viral, you can survive. Bacterial will kill you, but it's also the one that can be treated within reason.
And that's what they said.
They have to get antibiotics into your brain, and that's tough.
Yes. So they have, what they're looking for is a virus or a disease that is deadly but treatable. And I'm like, okay, and they're trying to camouflage you. They say that specifically, we're going to camouflage you. And they come up with a vaccine that will make you invisible to these zombies. Great. But once you get treated for it, does that make you visible again?
I would imagine so, because the weakness is gone. I mean, so that's what didn't make any sense. I mean, I know Jerry was just doing that as a, you know, an example. So whenever he got the vaccine, he wasn't really worried about being camouflaged anymore. But whoever is fighting has to be suffering from this disease during the fighting phase, and then has to come back and get the. But then at that point, if they've got the vaccine, if they get the vaccine, I would imagine that they're visible again, because it would make. I mean, the logic is flawed anyways regards to this movie, but I mean, if you think about it, I mean, just scientifically, you would bounce back, your body would be fighting off the virus, so that shouldn't be recognized anymore as a weakness by the zombies, if for whatever reason.
Yeah, because that's what I'm wondering. I'm like, okay, so I got the betas, I have just a useless pancreas, it is something that'll kill me within a matter of maybe a week if I'm untreated without insulin, but I am still alive with insulin. So I'm like, okay, cool. So if I'm pumping insulin through my body, that I'm going to be seen. Like, they don't explain it very well, but it does. It's not that it doesn't make sense to me, though. It does make sense that these zombies would want a viable fucking body or host to be able to continue this, their version of a rage virus, if you will.
It doesn't make a lot of sense to me, just because I can't see a virus being so smart that it will be able to target. I mean, okay, so it's almost like they're combining things. So if they go the route of like The Last of Us, which we may or may not cover this season, but if they cover The Last of Us, and you know, they go along with the lines of that parasitic or that fungus that basically controls its host to get it to a point where it can spread to another host. That's one thing. Fungi are weird. Like, me and Cody have had discussions. We honestly think that they came from another planet. I mean, because there's things about, they're a combination of animal and plant in different ways. Weird thing about fungus is that, or fungi, is that something about their structure is very close to a human liver. And if you treat a fungal infection, you got to be worried about the effects on the liver because killing both at the same time.
Oh, my God.
So,
That's like when I had, I had to take the pill form of Lamisil for, I had something on my toe.
Yeah.
I forgot. It was underneath. And they, I had to go every 2 months and get, I had to take the pills for 6 months and I had to go every 2 months to get a kidney or liver panel, probably both.
Well, definitely a liver panel because they have to check that constantly. Yes. Because once you're on those medications, those medicines all affect the liver. They just do. And I mean, it's kind of weird, but I mean, regardless of that, the fungus would make more sense to me because it's controlling its host, but viruses never do that. Viruses just want to spread. That's all they care about, you know?
Yeah.
And the only way that viruses are smart in the sense, especially like COVID, at least when it first starts spreading, is that the smart ones stop being deadly, which they do hint at this movie. They stop being immediately deadly enough to be able to find a viable host or whatever, or to spread on to somebody else. Because if they kill their host instantly, they can't spread.
Yeah.
So they might all start as deadly as that, but they will attenuate themselves, somehow reconfigure their DNA or viral DNA to where they're less deadly at first, just so that they can get a bigger incubation period so they can spread to more things.
Okay.
That's how they're smart, but that doesn't mean they select their host. They just want to spread to everything.
I think what they thought is that there's not going to be a lot of questions because they said this is a more aggressive form of rabies. And rabies is a virus. And rabies also causes you to be out of your fucking mind. I mean, we've all seen Cujo. He's a certified good boy. He was not guilty of his crimes. He was not himself. I mean, rabies is like, it makes animals aggressive, and then what do? They fucking bite. But it usually takes a lot longer than 12 seconds.
Yeah, and I mean, and the funny thing in this movie is they say that it took days, or at least hours, for the first few zombies to, spread the virus. I don't know why this one got more virulent to where, like, within 12 seconds you turn. That's the opposite of how viruses normally work.
I have no idea. There's no explanation for that, but it's also not real. But we're talking about some when we're in movies, we want to feel like we're in the situation.
Well, but there has to be, this is a word that like I've heard quite a bit on like Nerdrotic, and I think they got it from like some other sources, but verisimilitude, and it's just a big fancy word for it has to be believable enough for the audience not to be taken out of it.
That's true.
And like, and it's just like with Noah, if there's a car in a movie and somebody starts talking car jargon, they'll take him right out of the movie because he knows that's bullshit that they're slinging out there.
That's
same
true.
Thing with drugs in movies. Whenever I see a lot of movies where they're like, well, I'm going to give them this, and they give a big long name, antibiotic. And I'm like, that's not even antibiotic. That's that's an antifungal. You're not treating the right thing.
Yeah.
I mean, so like when you throw out there, it's like, oh, this is a rabies virus. Like, and then you start like all this jargon about how it works. You got to put some realism into it because, I mean, we can buy the zombies. I mean, we can suspend our disbelief that long. But if you start throwing in real world stuff and it doesn't sync up, you're going to kick us out of the movie. You just are.
So how did you feel about I guess you did already kind of say, so you're not really buying the whole if you are injected with a deadly disease that's curable, that you're going to be invisible.
I don't buy it because the virus would not care if you were dying with something else. It just wants to spread.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, so it's a lame like way to, I mean, I know they were trying to work in the whole thing about there's weaknesses that, that Mother Nature like throws out there. When it comes to viruses, the weaknesses are I hate to say it, but they're Mother Nature's like uses viruses pretty well. Like it hardly ever cares. The only weakness that Mother Nature ever finds is her inability to overcome like there's always going to be one person that is, or a certain percentage of people that are somehow immune to whatever's thrown out there.
Yeah.
And that's the only weaknesses that viruses run into. It's just the fact that, like, for example, the Black Plague, which was like viral and, you know, bacterial, there was just a certain percentage of the population that were immune to it. No reason why. And those people who were passed that immunity on to their kids, which is in a weird way down the line, actually made those offspring, you know, descendants, somewhat immune to HIV for some weird reason.
What the fuck?
Yeah, if you were immune, if your ancestors were immune to the Black Plague, you have a chance to be immune to HIV.
Well, don't go testing that theory.
No, I'm not offering that out there as like a reason to go out, because there's also like super gonorrhea virus out there that kill you way sooner if you go out there trying to test that theory. But
wait. So you could get gonorrhea and possibly survive this World War Z situation.
That gonorrhea would probably kill you really quick, the one that's out there right now.
No,
that's
not immune the super to one, just regular friendly gonorrhea.
But yeah, in theory, it's just their explanation for how you camouflage yourself in this movie is so weak. It does not hold up.
I refuse to apologize to our guests for having this discussion. It's funny as fuck. I got one more thing. Can you die from the herp?
No, not to my knowledge. That's the gift that keeps on giving your whole life.
Okay. Lame.
It does figure into a plot point, though, in a post-apocalyptic novel, by the way. In that reality, it was the measles virus that mutated and killed everybody, or except for a few people. But the one person the few people that survived, one of his descendants, like his kids, goes across America and brings back this person who has one of the love bugs, as they called it. Like, in, you know, this was written back in the 50s.
Yeah.
He ends up having like basically herpes or gonorrhea or one of those, and like ends up killing and like it spreads amongst the community and starts killing the survivors that survived this super measles. So even in the apocalypse, the STDs will live on.
Jesus, just
be aware of that.
Gross. All right, moving on.
But other plot holes. How did Jerry pick the one of the viruses that would not kill him?
That was pure luck, just like everything else in the film. He had pure
plot
luck.
Armor.
Yeah,
because the guy, I wouldn't care, but they make a whole point of it. They go back to that office in the WHO, and the guy's like, he better not select out that one box. If he does, and then Jerry just pours everything out, and he's like, if he gives himself something out of that one box, he's instantly dead. This is all pointless. And he magically chooses the right one. I hate that scene.
Yeah.
I hate it.
I mean, I wouldn't know what to do. And he saw the skeleton on there, and he's like, yeah, this is it. Because you know what I really wish had happened, and it would have been funny, but they probably didn't want to take away from this quotation mark intense scene, was the camera. You know how we talked about how cameras can usually go back and forth, up and down, left and right?
Yeah.
If he's looking at the camera and you just see it shake no, and then he grabs another one and it's like no, and then he grabs another virus and it's like yes.
I mean, that would have at least made sense. It would have been funny, but at the same time, it would have, I mean, could have bought that scene. Just the fact, again, our Gary Stu picks the right one just by for plot armor's sake. I mean, it just aggravated me so bad. You mentioned one part of a plot hole that I didn't think about initially, but like, why was it conveniently empty in that second city they were in New Jersey enough for them to go down the streets and get in the apartment after Philadelphia, where they started at, was like just so overrun that if you were out on the streets, you were fucking dead?
Were they in the major part of the city, or were you talking about when they're driving on the road and they were calling what's his name and saying, hey, this
is... No. When they, right after they go to the grocery store, get the albuterol inhalers for their daughter, they go like down the road a bit, and they have to hole up in somewhere because the Terry, whatever his name is, tells them, he's like, I can't get you until in the morning.
Yes.
For whatever reason. So, but he says you have to go on top of one of the buildings and set off or whatever. And when, and they see a few things in the distance, but the streets are relatively just quiet. Oh, yeah.
Don't know. Maybe do we know that it hit that city yet? Cause we know it hit the city behind them, literally behind them.
It had hit the city because, I mean, right after that, right when they get inside the building, that's when the zombies run past the guy you were talking about. So why was it convenient? Another plot armor part.
Yes. But
conveniently, it was enough of a, you know, a slowdown in the zombie traffic that they were able to just mosey their way down, you know, the streets or whatever. I didn't like that.
Yeah, with a grocery cart. Just cling, yeah. cling, all the way down. Their fucking loud-ass, noisy-ass daughters don't know how to fucking... How are you going to be special ops and you haven't trained your daughters how to go fucking silent? What did they say? They even had a code word, too, like a quiet, like a ninja. Ninja quiet. These girls were not trained properly by their dad. He's a stay-at-home dad. He ain't got nothing but time to teach them how to be ninjas.
Well... And the thing is, too, even if he wants to believe his children, I mean, that's a whole other plot hole that you could probably argue. I could see some people doing this, but okay, so you've seen the worst of the worst. You've been out there, you've been in countries where you've seen, you know, in his instance, supposedly you've dealt with, like, terrible viruses, you've dealt with insurrections. You've seen the worst humanity has to offer and what can happen if society breaks down. He's not teaching his girls any survival skills. I mean, I know that you know, a lot of people would be like, well, not everybody has to be one of these weirdo preppers. But it's like, if you've seen that much, you would be teaching your daughter something. I'm sorry.
The only thing I could come up with, and I'm just going to throw it out right now, I did not like his wife. I did not like his daughters. I don't think that those women, those three women, I say women because the little girls have grown up now, but those three girls, women, whatever you want to refer to them as, they provided enough for me to believe that he loves so unconditionally the plain Jane. The daughters are one thing. Those are kids. But the wife, you know.
The wife was awful.
Yes.
Like, I mean, I didn't care for the character, and the actress didn't. There was no charisma there.
Anything. Yeah, nothing at all other than making him, he's, Jerry, you got to do it all, you know, which Jerry does do it all.
And that's a whole other thing. I mean, I don't just plot hole wise, I don't believe that somebody who looks like Brad Pitt would ever get with that woman.
I don't know. And Brad Pitt, he's a great actor. He wasn't selling how devotional he was to this woman, believe it or not.
No, not really. I mean, there was the scenes where he looked concerned for his family, and I bought that a little bit. But the love between him and his, I never bought it.
Mm-mm, no, never. Not at all. Like, they had no chemistry on set, which is, it is what it is, and it wasn't great.
There's a big difference between the chemistry he had. I mean, I know they're separated now, but, I mean, and it was a whole thing because he left Jennifer Aniston, but he did have a lot of chemistry with Angelina Jolie and Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
That was toxic. That was always going to be bad. I'm surprised they survived as long as they did.
Yeah, but there was still chemistry there. You could see it on the film.
Yeah, had they not left their spouses, it would have just been a flat-out good movie. Angie went on record to say that's the movie we fell in love while he was still with his wife. She didn't say with the wife part, but that's initially what had happened. Anyways, going back to World War Z, though, let's move forward because there's so many plot. There's another plot hole. I don't know if I should bring it up now. I think I will, actually. Okay, so yes, you're right. They made it down the street. No issues. Okay, whatever. There was a lot of stopping and asking questions in the middle of a fucking human stampede by these girls and the mom. What is that, Jerry? Daddy, what is that? Shut the fuck up and keep running. Has he? Okay, I can understand wanting to protect your daughters from a bad world that you know exists. And sometimes parents do that when they've seen the worst. You're discussing, okay, he hasn't taught them any survival skills. I personally would want to teach my kids some survival skills and be like, hey, guys, I'm not going to tell you exactly what, but I've seen some shit, and I just want you to know that there's horrible stuff out there, but you don't have to be afraid as long as you're prepared, you know?
Okay. Well, that's my feelings on it. Yeah. I mean, even if you don't want to go the route, and he clearly wants his kids to live in a better world than he lives in, and all parents want that. But you've also got to be a realist, and even if you want to go down to the base level biology, you want your genes to survive.
Yes.
That means imparting wisdom upon your genes that these are things you might need for survival. Even if you code it in words like, you know, in a way that's like, I'm not going to say why I want you to learn this, but I want you to learn this. Like,
yeah.
If you girls are out, like, for instance, if you girls are out by yourself, you've got a car, which I know they're younger in this movie, so this wouldn't be a discussion. Put a key between your fingers. You'll need it. And I'm not going to say why, but you might want to have that handy just to, you know, like little things like that, yeah. You know, if nothing else.
Yeah.
It's just like he was like, oh, I've dealt with that life. That's in the past. I'm not going to teach my girls anything because everything's going to be happy now. It's like nobody who's seen as much as this guy had to have seen for him to be such a Jerry Stew would have done that. Just saying.
My dumb explanation to explain the dumbness away was, oh, he wants to protect his daughters from the world. Whatever. Okay, big mistake. That's your first problem, sir. Second, he didn't teach his wife nothing. He didn't teach her any fucking survival skills. You think... When, like, I had questions when I was in Nevada and a shootout allegedly happened and there was a human stampede. But once I realized in that brief moment what's happening, thankfully my daughter was the one to scream shooter, we ran in the opposite direction of what people were doing. But after that point, there was no questions to be asking. People are running. I see my family running in directions. That's where I'm going. And I'm not going to be like, Noah, what's happening, babe? He don't fucking know.
you know, that's the stereotype about white people, right? It's like something bad's going on. And like, you know, every other ethnicity is like ducking or running.
Yeah.
And white people are like, where'd that come from?
Yeah. What's that noise?
What's that sound?
The wife with her fucking questions. So many fucking questions. And not only that, her husband doesn't know. And I think that I would be guilty of that. Like if I was in the RV, like, okay, who was that? What was that? Where was that? Do we have any answers? Can you call your friend that you were in the UK with, you know?
Yeah. That's a whole other thing. What was she supposed to have done, like, before they met? Like, I know she was from the UK, but does it ever say in the movie? I don't remember at this point, like, what she did as in her, or what she's actually doing, because she's the breadwinner in the movie. So, like, what does she do for a living?
They just bypassed that. She was such a... I know he needs a wife and a kid, but, man, they couldn't have been any more fill-in than these characters got. I did not believe he actually loved his children.
I didn't believe. I mean, I couldn't get past the fact that they were a couple just because, oh, yeah. I mean, you know, we talk about the whole math guy on TikTok all the time, but he's got a lot of stuff right. And nobody who looks like Brad Pitt would ever settle for her. They would have to be on par physically. And then it wouldn't matter. You know, we've talked about this off air too, about like women, you know, men don't care about like work social scale. Like we don't care if you're, you know, like make less or, you know, whatever.
Oh yeah.
But looks have to be there at least, you know, if you're his level, I could buy somebody like, I don't know, Terry, you know, I mean, not saying much, but the guy's not a looker who plays Terry in the movie. Yeah. I could see him selling down for like, you know, Karen in this.
Yes.
You know, they're comparable in their looks area, but not Brad Pitt's character.
No.
Segan had more charisma and interaction with Brad Pitt than his wife did.
Oh my God. That's so funny. You know what? And the sad part is too, I feel like we're shitting on poor Karen. And it's a little bit has to do with her acting. She wasn't selling anything and whatever, but she's not an ugly woman by any means. She's actually very pretty, naturally pretty too.
But they don't make she's her not, that way in the movie.
No, she's not gorgeous. She doesn't come off as smart at all. In fact, she comes off the opposite. She comes off to me as a stay at home mom and like, oh God, I've just lost a fucking fan base right there. Because, and hear me out, she has no background in anything. Like, my background in accounting wouldn't get us anywhere, but I know how to work. And when you know how to work, you know how to fucking, you know you have to do things to make things work. Again.
Well, and Now, I could see actually woke Gen Zers having a point if they went back and looked at this movie, saying that her being as such a non-person is actually, you know, a detriment to the movie. It is, because just what you said, there should have been scenes, especially whenever they're getting ready to kick her off the boat with her kids or the aircraft carrier, where she's arguing with them. It's like, Jerry did his duty. I have lost my husband. We deserve a place on this ship, if nothing else, because of his sacrifice. And it's like, she just accepts it. She's just okay. Nothing. Just dump me in Nova Scotia, you know.
Exactly. And like I said, I don't want to be disrespectful to any class of person, per se, but a stay-at-home mom whose husband did everything, she wouldn't know what to do. She wouldn't have the skills. She doesn't even have survival skills.
But that's the thing. She's not a stay-at-home mom. She's the breadwinner.
I know. She's supposed to be the breadwinner.
She should be arguing. If nothing else, like, there's certain scenes and like something from her past comes up and it's like, I used to work in the financial district. You know, this area would be cut off or something, just like from her past to come up. She's got some competence.
Competence. And we didn't get that from her. So it's not the actress's fault. It's definitely the screenwriter and the director that just didn't, they just like, well, run and ask questions.
And it's also Brad Pitt's fault as producer, because he gave every good quality to a person in the movie, to his own character, and everybody else has to suffer because
greedy ass motherfucker. That's actually pretty funny now that I think about it. He's like, I'm the golden boy.
If there was one scene in the movie where Jerry had relied on somebody else for their skills or knowledge, and, you know, it would have been one thing, but he doesn't. Like, every time that he meets somebody, they might have a bit of information that he needs, but he's always more competent than them at their own job. And, I mean, that goes back to the Jerry Stew of it all. I mean, it's like, you're not good at everything, dude. You have to defer to somebody. Like, even when he meets those soldiers. Those soldiers, I mean, have, you know, clearly, I mean, probably seen more combat than him. And yet he's more, he seems to be better at combat than they are.
Okay.
I mean, in a lot of instances.
I'm looking right now. I want to know what special ops does, because Jerry does everything. He literally does everything. They're elite commandos of the U.S. military. They are called upon to perform the toughest duties in the armed forces, and their actions directly affect the protection of America's freedom. But are they doctors? Like, do they train them to be doctors? Because Jerry's had some first aid training, which I could see special ops.
They could have, they would have field dressing and field surgery. They would have to know that for spec ops.
Okay. So there's that, but like, everything. He has no virology background.
He would, I mean, I'm surprised they didn't have him just try to fly the plane at some point.
Oh my God.
Now, you could argue maybe that spec ops have to be able to learn how to fly, but at the same time, I mean, I'm surprised they even relied on the pilots to do that part of their job. I mean,
because he did fly a plane, but like, I could see special ops, because you need a pilot in special ops. So somebody has to be trained how to do it. Maybe it was Jerry. Who knows how to do? Oh, well, Jerry knows how to do everything. So let's fucking get him out here, you know?
Like, the only scene where he shows a little bit of non-knowledge is like when he's deferring to the WHO people. It's like, okay, what would I need? But even then, like, again, we go back to the scene where he picks out the right virus for the job. It's like, he had no input from them whatsoever, and somehow he figured it out.
Not a camera shake. Not even the zombie helped him. That was right outside the door. That was fucking bullshit. Like, you're right there. You know what he can use.
It's just, I mean, there's only so much you can argue in the event. I mean, yes, they have to be, you know, reliable and rely on their own selves in spec ops. So they have to have a lot of different skills, but they don't have to be perfect in all of those skills.
Yeah.
And he is, and it's aggravating in the movie.
A Jerry Stew.
But yeah, there's so many other like plot holes that, I mean, it's just the movie's riddled with them. It's fun to watch as a popcorn movie. Mm-hmm. I'll just put it that way.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Seeing scene after scene. Like, for instance, there's a plot hole. How did that kid that they meet,
the little Mexican boy?
The little Mexican boy, how did he survive when both his parents were attacked whenever they broke in?
Yeah, and he had, not only did he have zombies running from the front, he had zombies ahead of him as well, that the ones were that were going after Jerry. Yes, that was a unique situation. I do want to bring up something else. Jerry loved that kid more than he loved his daughters.
There is a lot more interaction between him and that kid, for sure.
Yes, there is more parental concern, and I get it. Like, this kid just literally lost everything and saved him, technically, if you think about it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I that is another plot hole, because I had thought about that. And, like, Jerry even had to kill, or one of the military guys had to kill that kid's dad, because he was first on deck coming after them, you know?
Yep, he was the one that was running on the roof, and they had to put a bullet in him whenever he was running through there.
The kid definitely saw his dad get taken down.
Well, right after that, there's the plot hole, which they actually even point out in the movie, which doesn't make any sense to me. I guess they're trying to establish the rules of the virus. He gets blood in his mouth.
Oh, yes.
Like, this is spread through bites. Saliva, obviously, is a vector. How does blood in your mouth not, like, I mean, so blood's not the vector, but the saliva is. I tell them, the viral load in your blood is way more than you'll ever have in your mouth.
Yeah.
Like, it really is.
I don't know. Something about zombies, it's what's in the saliva. And I think that's something that's kind of a unestablished but unspecified rule, is that whatever's in the saliva...
The only thing that makes sense in the Romero movies is that it's not really the saliva contains the virus. It's that it's such bacteria-filled that the bacteria will spread throughout your body and kill you, making you rise as an undead. That's acceptable because human bites are disgusting. I mean, they have, you know, outside the Komodo dragon, they have some of the worst. But that's still what in this situation wouldn't apply, because this is a virus and it is spreading.
Yes.
And it would still spread through blood.
That was a funny fucking scene. He's like, what are you doing? He's like, it got in my mouth.
I also, going back to when he discovers the 12 seconds, why is it a kid reading off the 12 second thing? Like, I never understood the point of that.
I think it was the bear that was talking. She's got a bear that talks or something, or like one of those toys that, because my kid had a bunch of toys like that too.
But it's so weird. Why wouldn't it just, like, Jerry sitting there like 1,000, 2,000,
yeah.
You know?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't have a good explanation.
It doesn't fit the scene at all, having that little cheery, like, you know, kid's toy reading off the 12 seconds.
I think it was supposed to be creepy more than anything. It just didn't work out
that
way.
It doesn't work.
Yeah.
No. Any other plot holes before we move on to acting? Because I think we've basically blasted this movie apart as far as, like, its
in
story.
In terms of plot holes, we'll get into the actual, like, review at the end. So, but anyways, no, let's move on to acting. I think we covered it pretty well, though.
Yeah, there's really no strong actors in this movie, to be perfectly honest. I mean, Segan's fine for the character, but she's the stoic, like, you know, Israeli soldier. That's it. I mean,
yes, I like her. I like the doctors.
Brad Pitt's fine in certain scenes, but mm-hmm. he's terrible in others, like you said, with interacting with his own family.
It's his wife and his kids that throw me off. We're not buying it, obviously, and I hate to say it because of she's a basic pretty, a natural beauty versus this gorgeous, you know, 10 woman that Brad Pitt would obviously be able to pull easily.
I mean, look at his history. Jennifer Aniston and Angelina Jolie, he clearly has, I mean, he goes for way up the scale from where Karen's at.
Yeah, but
I know that's meta knowledge outside of the movie. I'm just saying it's, you know.
Even Jennifer Aniston is girl next door pretty. She's conventionally pretty versus Angelina Jolie.
Not in Horrible Bosses, she ain't. God, she's gorgeous in that movie.
Okay. Mm. But that's also Hollywood doing her up a little bit more. But even putting her next to, like, a Megan Fox, and I know Megan Fox has surgery. We're talking pre-surgery Megan Fox. We're talking Angelina Jolie before she became a skeleton. Even at her highest. Now, somebody might pick her because they're like, well, I don't want to go for the 10 because the 10 is going to cause me problems. That aside, if you could pick one to sleep with and have a hall pass, most of the people are going to go for the hotter babes because it's just going to be a one-time deal. That's just where their attention is going to be diverted, in my opinion, in my expert opinion.
I'll buy that. Although, I mean, Jennifer, well, even Meet the Millers. Like, she's gorgeous.
I'm not saying she's plain Jane by any means. She's taken very good care of herself. She's barely starting to get, like, fillers and things like that, which I think she admitted to, like Botox, I think.
Yeah, she's definitely not Courtney Cox level of, what did you do to yourself yet?
Yeah, so, and she waited a long time, too. She didn't start doing it in her fucking 20s to prevent, you know, issues. She's just like, okay, they're here. It's time to address this problem.
Individual people in the movie are fine. I mean, they serve their points. Like, yes, the guy who plays Jürgen Wurmbrum, he's fine.
Yeah, I like him, yeah.
I like the CIA agent playing the crazy guy who's pulled out of his own teeth. And yes, and that is a cool scene where he talks about how North Korea is going to beat everybody else because they pulled the teeth out. It was seeing that was going to be a thing. Kim Jong, they don't mention him by name, but yes, like they basically know. He pulled out the teeth of every person in his country so that they would not be able to bite when they turned.
Wow.
That's an interesting strategy, Cotton. We'll see how it works out for them.
Yeah. Good Lord. Look, when it comes to acting, literally, the only complaints I have are about the wife and the kids.
Yeah, I mean, they're consistently, like, bland or bad in the movie.
Yes.
And the kids, it's not their – kids are – I mean, like we said, it's hard to find a good kid actor.
Yeah.
Well – speaking of that, that documentary about Nickelodeon, Silence on the Set.
I need to watch that.
I would watch two episodes and it is rough. But anyways,
Jesus, and like I said, like you said, Brad Pitt really not selling his role as a husband and a father either, and he is the number one actor on this film
and producer. And what is his number one role in the movie? It's supposed to be a loving father and, you know, husband. I mean, outside of the Jerry Stew of it all, I mean, it's, you know, he's supposed to be that.
It's just sad to me that whenever they are not on set with him or they're not in a scene with him, I should say, the movie gets better to me.
It does. The music's fine in the movie. Skip it ahead to that. It's just, it's plain. There's no pieces like that one from 28 Days Later.
Yeah.
There's nothing that stands out like that.
You know what there is in this movie that stands out when it comes to noise, and it's not the zombies. I mean, I guess that would be something that stood out, but it's the silence. The silence is what stands out to me in this film, and that's sad. Because when you're a composer, you want your music to be what stands out, but when the silence is what stands out and really gets your heart thumping, Halloween had the ultimate, you know, song that would get your heart thumping. When that song came on, you're like, oh, you're in danger, you know?
You're suddenly Ralph Wiggum.
Yes, exactly. I'm in danger. Exactly. And so, but it was the silence in this movie that let you know you were in danger.
Well, a good composer not necessarily the composer, but the sound editor knows when to balance that, especially for a horror movie, because you can't get good tension if you're constantly just blasting, like, you know, Marilyn Manson or something like that. I mean, it's fine to start your movie out with something that's, you know, bombastic and have those, like, little harpsichord, like, ding, 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 you know, like, leading into something. But when you want to sell the tension of a scene, like, have it be silent right before, and the audience is waiting, it's like, where the fuck is this coming? It's too quiet. Something's going to happen, and then, you know, then the music comes out, you know?
Yeah. So... yeah, I don't have a lot to say about the music. That's great. Again, they had appropriate music here and there, but it's the silence that I enjoyed the most because that's when I was like, we're fucked.
All right.